531.
Survivors of abuse from the Pacific community continue to give evidence before the Abuse and Care Royal Commission of Inquiry at the public hearing Tulo, our Pacific Voices, Tatala e Pulonga, which runs until the 30th of July at the Whaleo Samoa in Mangere, Auckland. Every day on Pacific Days, we are sharing some of the evidence from survivors. Today, a statement from Pulotu Solomon. Pulotu was a watchman at Owairaka Boys Home in 1962 when he was 26 years old. He witnessed abuse and was told to stay silent. He is now 77. And this is the first time he has publicly shared what he witnessed at Owairaka. He's come forward to support the voices of survivors. His daughter, Tupe Solomon Tanoa'i, read his statement on his behalf. Again, as with other testimonies, evidence that have been shared over the course of the week, due to the sensitive nature, discretion is advised.
Salo falava malole suifua maua malelangi mama nimbolevinaka. My name is Tupe Solomon Tanoa'i, and I am the daughter of Pulotu Arthur Gus Solomon. I'm joined here with my brothers and sisters, children, my husband and nephews and nieces. Pulotu is the chiefly title of my father. He is 77 years old. His title comes from the village of Malai Malu in the district of Falealili in Samoa. I am representing my father because he has multiple health issues, including Parkinson's disease, which has severely limited his mobility, and he seldom leaves the house. But my father wanted to go on record today to validate the voices of survivors. I feel the gravity of the pain and suffering that we are discussing throughout this commission. But I feel that telling my father's story is one of the most significant things that I can do to support him in his old age.
Thank you, Tupe. Now, I understand that you had conversations with your father, Leafiunga Yapulotu, and you're going to read excerpts from his statement which he provided to the inquiry, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. When you begin, please feel free to take your time. If you need to take a break, just look at me.
Okay. So these are my father's words.
Well, before you start, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You may have had this explained. This is being typed and it's also being signed. So if you could keep an eye on the speed, thank you.
I am of Samoan and Balangi extraction, but I was born in Fiji and did my schooling there. I moved to New Zealand when I was 18 years old. The purpose of this statement is to talk about my time working at Owairaka Boys Home in Auckland. I worked there as a watchman from December 1970 for about 4 weeks. In that 4 weeks, I saw so much violence that I had to get out of there. I couldn't stay there any longer. I left around the end of January 1971 to teach at St. Mary's Convent Primary School in Avondale. In around 1962, when I was about 18 years old, the brothers in Fiji sent me to New Zealand to become a Marist brother. This was before the thick of the dawn raids, when we had to be so careful, we felt that we had to wear our passports around our necks in case we were ever stopped in the street by police. It was about Christmas time in 1970 when I started working at Owairaka as a watchman. I was about 26 years old at the time. It was very different from what I'd come from at St. Paul's. I felt that St. Paul's was a loving place where kids were looked after. On the other hand, this place was harsh and tough. It was not a happy place. I remember going to an interview and filling out an application form. I think it was Mr. Ricketts who interviewed me. He was the headmaster or boss. I also had to do a medical checkup by the doctor at Wairaka. I can't recall whether or not it was part of the recruitment process. The reason I remember doing a medical checkup is because I addressed the doctor as Doc, and that made him angry. He said, "Don't call me Doc, it's Doctor to you." That incident really put me off speaking up, and instead I thought, sheesh, you really need to keep quiet here. As a watchman, I was just somebody there to make sure that the boys were doing their chores, work or whatever it was that they were assigned to do, and to ensure that they did not abscond. It was a different role to that of the guard. Nothing was mentioned about training like it is today, where the emphasis is on upskilling and training people. Maybe it was because I wasn't there long enough, and they may have mentioned it if I was there longer. I also don't remember any staff meetings being held in the time I was there. Mr. Ricketts was my boss. I didn't see him often. In the 4 weeks that I was there, I would have seen him 4 times. He was in his office all the time, like a mystery man, and we hardly talked. I was assigned to work with Mr. Pickering, and he was the person who told me how things were done at Wairaka. He was like the foreman, and he was Mr. Ricketts' right hand. Mr. Pickering was a young European English fellow who I remember drove a Land Rover. I think he had an army or navy background, and he used to tell me about how he was a military man. He was nasty and wore his socks and shoes like a navy man and his shorts and belt. He used to hold a baton while at work. I don't recall any other staff as being Pacific or Māori. Even though I cannot recall every detail, I remember the names Mr. Ricketts and Mr. Pickering because they were so bad that they stood out to me. The boys at Wairaka were mainly Māori and Pacific Islanders. Even so, no attention was ever paid to the Treaty of Waitangi. In those days, the treaty was nothing. Thank God we've got something now. A typical day at Wairaka for the boys would be to wake up, have breakfast, attend an assembly, do cleaning chores, work in the garden, have lunch, go for a bus ride, and then have dinner. Every day at the assemblies, Mr. Pickering would have the boys line up before their duties were given to them. He would get them to stand up straight and would use a baton and push it into their stomachs to make sure they stood up straight. Staff that were assigned to work with me also carried batons for this purpose. Each morning, the boys had to sweep the dormitories and foyers, wipe down the windows, dust the ledges, and clean the toilets. One thing I remember was the way Mr. Pickering told me to supervise the boys' chores in the morning. He told me to never pass off their work as good the first time. He would tell me, "Always say, no, it's not good," at least 3 times. He told me that if they're wiping down the windowsills, don't pass it until they've done it 3 times. Same with the toilets. It was a way of disciplining the boys. It really got to me. I would tell myself, "No, no, this is not me." It made me want to leave. I was not aware if there were any educational programs provided at Wairaka. That may have been because I was there during the Christmas and New Year period, I'm not sure. We were not allowed to fraternise with the boys. The other staff would tell me, if you do that, then you become weak. If the boys were found speaking to me, senior staff would frown on them. Not being able to speak with the boys was really against what I had come from, so I found that very hard. But still, I used to talk to them at night. I used to ask, how are you? At first, the boys were suspicious, wondering whether I was for real or not, whether I was trying to get information from them. I could tell they were reluctant to say anything. But after a couple of weeks of talking to them, I think some of them knew that I was on their side. But I didn't want to push it, because if they were found talking to me, then they would be in trouble. It was a sad place. Absconding was a word that I got to know very quickly. Mr. Pickering used to say, any absconding, don't panic. Go to the phone, ring up. If the managers are not here, just ring up the police and they will be here within hours. Sure enough, maybe a few days after that spiel, one of the boys took off and the phone was used to call the cops. Within hours, the boy was back and put into the secure unit. Mr. Pickering asked me if I knew what happens to the boys who go into the secure unit. When I replied no, he said that we put them in there for the night and next day. We, referring to the guards, go in and we give them such a thrashing that they do not want to go out again. He confirmed that that was what the secure unit was for. On Sundays, Mr. Pickering ran a sort of games afternoon. I remember very clearly the boxing that would take place, where the boys would be forced to box each other. Staff would deliberately pair them off, especially if we noticed during the week that some were fighting or were not happy with one another. We would go to a place where a ring was set up, and we all watched as they hammered one another to virtually pulp. The boxings were attended by staff that were rostered on that day, and at least a couple of our heads were there too, watching and cheering the boys on. All the kids were also made to stand on and cheer. One of the guards would act as a referee by keeping time for each boxing round and starting each round by saying, "Ready, fight." Everyone was forced to be a part of the afternoon's entertainment. I am not aware of the boys receiving any rewards for boxing. I also don't remember any boys refusing to box. If they did, I don't remember what happened to them. During the time I was there, there were at least two boxing sessions. Watching the boxing made me feel crook. But it was part of the system. Being a newcomer to the place, I didn't want to open my mouth, so I just sat there and watched. I struggled with the job because it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to help and teach the kids in any way I could. But that wasn't my function here. My function was just to watch, make sure that they were there, make sure they were supervised going to the toilet, and make sure they didn't run away. It was a pretty thankless job. The most grievous or grave incident that really worried me and caused me to make up my mind to leave was an incident involving Mr. Ricketts. One day I was in his office and a smallish boy was brought in. A few questions were asked, and before I could realise what was happening, Mr. Ricketts lunged at him, punching and kicking him. I thought to myself, what is going on here? The boy was on the floor. His mate was standing there and so was I. as this poor kid was hammered to a pulp. It happened so fast. That's when I thought, that's it, I'm out of here. I can't recall why Mr. Ricketts beat the boy.
Tupe Solomon Tanuai, reading a statement on behalf of her father, Bulotu Arthur Gus Solomon, who was a watchman at Owairaka Boys Home in 1962 on day 4 of abuse and care, Royal Commission of Inquiry, Tulo, our Pacific Voices, at the Tala e Pulonga public hearing at the Whale o Samoa in Mangere.